Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Good evening and welcome to Encouragementology. Thank you so much for tuning in. I appreciate you spending some time with me tonight. I know it's a Monday. Everybody's probably pretty wore down already with the start of work, but we are going to talk about empathy. And we're talking about rediscovering empathy, noticing the world around you. Now, notice I use the word rediscovering versus finding or learning. You know, studies show that around 2 years of age, children start to show genuine empathy and understanding of how other people feel, even when they don't feel the same way themselves. Where did that go? Somewhere through life, we lost that understanding and replaced it with judgment, disregard, pity, and hate. I could just say blank and let you fill it in. You know, this show isn't to point a finger or cast my own judgment. As with all shows, it's to bring it up, shine a light on it, discuss some alternatives, and offer, of course, some encouragement. If we don't change our behavior, we can't expect anyone else to change theirs. You may just have to lead the charge. Okay, I brought it up. So grab a light and let's shine it and let's see what's really going on. So the way of the world is working against us. You know, negativity is everywhere. At every turn, we're met with what's wrong with the world? What's wrong with the people of the world? Rarely do we celebrate the good or give a public shout out for all that's going right. I guess trauma and tragedy are just more newsworthy. Or maybe it's an attempt to keep us in that problem-solving mode, you know, always on hyper alert. My guess is it's more sensational, and just like witnessing a train wreck, it keeps you tuning in. With all this focus on the negative, how could you possibly do anything else but judge, pity, and hate? You know, the media isn't giving you the why, sharing those intimate details with you about people involved so you can see what might have led them to that place. You're only informed with the harsh reality of what they want you to believe. Well, that's it. We're doomed. Humanity is gone. Non-existence. You know, it's like we see all of these episodes or all of these news updates. 5 people burnt in a building. No one made it out alive. You know, we might share that for a moment, do a, you know, sad face, and then we move on with our day. It's like we're desensitized to all of this tragedy that just keeps flooding our consciousness. You know, you would be shocked if you turned it on and they said, hey, it's a great day in your area and everything's going well. Everybody's on top of their game. Everybody's winning. Boy, you'd be shocked, wouldn't you? You'd look up from whatever you're doing and think you're in the twilight zone. But we get so much of this negativity that how can we push that aside and just be positive? When you just hear nothing but negative, how can you be positive? The math doesn't make it. You know, there's a program called CBS Sunday Morning. I'm going to give them a little shout out. If you haven't watched that program, it's heartwarming. The whole program really uncovers human interest stories, interesting articles. It really will get you sucked in with just such a positive light on humanity. It's something that we're all craving. We're craving this need to connect with something positive. In a sea of negativity, we're looking for the positive. We don't shed a tear when we hear about the tragedy, but we find a good human interest story that we can connect with, and all of a sudden we're in tears. I can't watch that show without crying. We need to take it back so we understand where it came from and what at what point we might have lost it. Just accepting that's it, this is how things are now, is just unacceptable. When we accept this as normal, we lower the bar. I don't even want to think about how low that bar can go. So instead of thinking that way, I'm going to fight back by bringing these subjects to your attention and challenging you to think about them in a different way. Are you with me? I hope you are. You've tuned in tonight. If this is your first time, welcome. I hope you find it helpful. I hope you tell a friend, and I hope you tune in again, of course. Empathy, an important component of social and emotional development, emerges with consistent and caring relationships over several years. Much of the groundwork is laid during early attachments formed in infancy. While it's clear that empathy is important for the development of healthy social relationships and character traits like caring and kindness, it isn't necessarily something that a child has or doesn't have by a certain age. There isn't a clear set of checkboxes you can mark on a definitive test you can take to make sure a child is on track to develop empathy. Here's a funny story by Aaron Walsh of Dr. Dave Mind Positive Parenting. Just last week, I was touched when my son's preschool teacher emailed me a picture of him offering a hug to a little girl in his class who was having a hard time. "There it is," I thought proudly, "empathy." This warm glow cooled significantly just a few hours later when the same little angel watched his brother topple head over heels on the sidewalk. When we pointed out that the giant tears streaming down his brother's face told us his baby brother was sad and scared, Miles responded by running in circles with his hands over his ears, chanting, that's funny," over and over again. Empathy means that a child understands that he or she is a distinct person from those around them, and that other people may have different feelings and perspectives than their own. They can recognize feelings in themselves and others, and name them. They can regulate their own emotional responses. They can put themselves in someone else's shoes and imagine how someone might be feeling. They can imagine what kind of action or response might help a person feel better. While we are born hardwired with the capacity for empathy, its development requires experience and practice. It just doesn't happen. And cutting through the negativity definitely isn't a way, or cutting through is a way to practice it. Sticking with the negativity is not. As children get older, the cognitive components of empathy begin to emerge and complement the emotional templates they form during the first years of life. By this preschool years, children become more aware that other people have separate bodies, feelings, and experiences. They develop what is called a theory of mind, which enables children to engage in early perspective thinking, a precursor to being able to stand in someone else's shoes and care about what they feel. Cognitive components of empathy really come into their own by 6 or 7. When a child is more capable of taking another person's perspective and offering solutions or help when they notice someone in distress. A child's executive functioning skills mature and they become more capable of managing their own distress. They gain the cognitive space they need to connect with another person's experience without feeling totally overwhelmed. You know, I think back to my oldest daughter when she was 5. She was so self-aware at an early age. And I remember this is not a great parenting moment, but I am going to share it because it sort of shines a light on this. She was 5. We were in the car. I'd picked her up from school and we were on our way through town and we were coming up to a 4-way stop. And there was a man in a truck right in front of me. And he had the bed of his truck opened. And he had multiple tools and things, items in the back. I'm sure he was into construction or something of that nature. Well, apparently, he hit the gas a little too hard, and the force of that acceleration caused the items in the bed of his truck to land all over the intersection. I kind of snickered. Isn't that horrible? I don't know why. It's kind of like we watch the videos, the ridiculous videos where people are falling down or, you know, wrecking or whatever they're doing. And we laugh at that because for whatever reason, we think that's funny. Human tragedy, albeit at its most innocent level, is kind of humorous. At any rate, my empathetic age 5 daughter did not think so. And she scolded me right there in the intersection. "Mom, that's not funny. That man lost all of his tools. He's going to have to stop and get out and get all of those tools." Oh, I felt way smaller than her little 5-year-old frame. But it taught me something. She's noticing the world around her and how other people are feeling at that given moment. What a milestone. It also told me to zip it. Not everything is funny, nor will your 5-year-old think it is. So we had it. What causes us to lose it? Some suggest an extreme of being overly empathetic and contracting empathy fatigue. That could be one thing. Empathy fatigue. Either we don't have enough or we have too much. Dr. Leon Seltzer, author of Evolution of the Self, says, "Compassion, however, is viewed as including all the components of empathy, but taking this imagined identification one crucial step further. Literally meaning to suffer together, it focuses more on the willingness to actually take action to alleviate another one's suffering. In fact, eminent psychologist Barbara Fredrickson has dubbed it empathy in action, and such proactive efforts may register physically as a decelerated heart rate, secretion of the bonding hormone, oxytocin, and involve regions of the brain associated with caregiving. Additionally, because self-disinterestedly advocating for another one's welfare can be rewarding, acting compassionately can also light up the pleasure centers of the brain. Some writers investigating the negative ramifications of overdoing one's compassion has labeled the phenomenon empathy fatigue. But most writers employ the term compassion fatigue. And this preference may be because the latter suggests that people who go overboard with their compassion are more likely to take on the pain of those that they're helping. On the contrary, empathy may endeavor to accurately take in both cognitively and emotionally. That is the experience that they're identifying with, compassionately and with action. Can you do both? Can you have empathy for someone and compassion to act? That's a whole nother side of empathy. I could have gotten out of my car and actually helped that man put his tools back into his truck. That would have been the thing to do. Well, some could say you're darned if you do and you're darned if you don't. As I've always said, we need to strive for a healthy balance and do everything we can with moderation. This comes from an all or nothing kind of girl. I've done a lot of growing to see that there are also varying shades of black and white. And a healthy balance means consistent happiness. And now that's my goal. It starts by noticing the world around you. Be careful if your only lens is from your vantage point and from your own perspective. Don't rely on what social media paints as the rosiest pictures or the greatest tragedies. Don't listen to one person's bias account or stay stuck in a steady stream of sensational news. Get out and see the world for yourself. Reach out, talk to people, ask questions, listen. That's the most important thing. Listen and act in your own terms. To see what is in front of one's nose is a constant struggle. That is a quote by George Orwell. He knew something about that, didn't he? According to a study, the ability to think about how someone else might feel is declining. But even more troubling, as Sarah Cronath, the lead researcher, explains, is the drop-off of people's ability to exhibit an emotional response to someone else's distress. Her study was called Changes in Dispositional Empathy in American College Students Over Time, a meta-analysis. The authors examined the responses of nearly 14,000 students who had completed a questionnaire measuring different types of empathy. The results show that the average level of empathetic concern, meaning people's feelings of sympathy for the misfortunes of others, declined by 48% between 1979 and 2009. The average level of perspective talking, which is people's tendency to imagine others' points of views, declined by 34% over the same period. There was a particularly steep decline between 2000 and 2009. While the study didn't examine why empathy may be declining, the authors draw on prior research to speculate that culprits could include the corresponding rise in narcissism among young people, the growing prevalence of personal technology and media use in the everyday life, shrinking family size, and stronger pressures on young people to succeed academically and professionally. We are losing our most valuable skill, social connectivity. To me, that's the basic glue, says Cronath. It's so rewarding to connect with human beings. Everything we know as psychologists tell us it's the most wonderful thing. So if we're losing that, I think that is distressing. Technology, separating us, interrupting our social connections, the rise of narcissism. We're seeing it. This is bizarre at how appropriate selfies have become. Not only the overposting of selfies, but taking a selfie in every situation at any time without regard to anyone else. It's pretty alarming. I've mentioned this before, but I spoke to Girls World Expo, which was a chance to speak to girls 13 to 18. And there was actually, I think it said 13 to 18, but there was actually some 11-year-olds in there as well, which I was very pleased to have in my session. And I was talking to them about the alarming statistics of girls who are unhappy with the way they look, unhappy with their bodies, and would do anything to change it. And we're talking about 98% of girls in high school. So I was telling them this, eyes wide open. And the next slide I showed them was a bunch of selfies. And these girls were making the traditional duck lips, as everybody calls it. And they had some of those filters where they had doe eyes and doe ears. And I asked the girls, I said, this must be the 2% of the confident girls. And they all shook their head. Oh, yes, that must be who that is. And I said, no, these are the 98% of the girls who need validation, reinforcement, are checking their likes and their loves, aren't happy with likes, want more loves. This is that generation of people needing validation. When you have so much focus on your own self and the way that you feel and your need for validation, you can't possibly connect and empathize with anyone else. Douglas Libere believes that many people suffer from what he calls the empathy deficient disorder, EDD. The psychologist has been observing firsthand the same decline as Conrath's research. De Beer is a business psychologist, psychotherapist, and writer. He's also the founder and director of the Center of Progressive Development in Washington. EDD means the inability to step outside yourself and tune in to what other people experience. This lack of empathy not only creates misunderstandings, it drives tensions and divisions towards those who think differently. LeBeer explains how the empathy deficient is driven by putting too much emphasis on acquiring things and people. It promotes vanity and self-importance. People equate what they have with who they are. They live under the delusion of being completely self-sufficient. That's a killer for empathy. LeBeer writes, "You lose touch with the true reality that all humans are interconnected and interdependent, all organs of the same body, so to speak." Additionally, the hyper-productivity culture is not helping either. The constant pressure to win is soul-sucking, as Dan Peterson, editor of Personal Growth, wrote. This self-focused approach doesn't leave room for social glue. There are two distinct types of empathy, emotional and cognitive. Most people associate empathy with feeling what other people feel, especially their pain. The emotional empathy is activated by mirror neurons in the brain. It's all about accomplishing goals for yourself instead of service to others. It's about how much money you can make and what stuff you can buy and what name you can make for yourself, Peterson said. Cognitive empathy, on the other side, is about understanding people. It doesn't require to suffer the way they do. This is also called perspective talking. It's an effort to understand how other people behave, think, or feel. A lot of companies have started putting a lot of emphasis on cognitive empathy, thank goodness, because instead of just trying to push their product, they really want to understand how people think and feel and what might be important to them before they develop a product. Isn't that a brilliant idea? Well, if we could do that before we open our mouth, think about what might come out. The Dalai Lama wrote, "Compassion is an aspiration, a state of mind, wanting others to be free from suffering. It's not passive, it's not empathy alone, but rather empathetic altruism that actively strives to free others from suffering. Genuine compassion must have both wisdom and loving kindness. Empathy is the conduit. Compassion is an accelerator." Isn't that an interesting way to think about it? You see someone, you understand what they're going through, and then you activate your kindness. Huh. Sort of sounds like here's your cue. I never talk to anyone who doesn't recognize this is a problem. I really don't. They're almost always in total agreement, and they say something has to be done. No one knows the answer, and most people are frustrated and confused on how they can help. So what next? When you're in that state, what happens to you? Are you frustrated? Do you see what's happening with the lack of empathy around you? What do? Do you continue to search for an answer, unwilling to accept this as reality? Or do you give in and accept the changing times? It is what it is. Times are changing. The good old days are gone. I'm afraid that's happening more than the previous suggestion. But are you just one person? What kind of impact could you possibly have? Just one little old person. Well, I'm here to tell you, you could have a big one. Maybe not immediately on a nation or the country or the world, but you can impact the people you come in contact with. And that's a huge start. Understand and encourage one person can start a ripple effect in ways you can't possibly track. What if your positive outlook on a subject changed the way someone else viewed it? Their tune changed, and they started sharing these radical ideas with someone else. I'm not talking about a video or a Facebook post that goes viral. I'm talking about connecting, understanding, and showing empathy and encouragement to someone else can really change the world. Even if the movement doesn't gain momentum in your lifetime, shouldn't you go ahead and start it anyway? What a wonderful legacy you could leave. Your kindness and your compassion rewrote history. The brilliant part of this is it's free and you can start today. It really doesn't take a lot of research or preparation, and you can work it into every aspect of your life. So remember, in the beginning, I said empathy is something that you can learn and practice. So here are 5 tips from the Mind Maven to put into exercise this week. Okay, are you ready to write these down? Number 1, actively listen. Listen more than you speak. Most of us speak at least twice as much as we listen. It's easy to get so caught up explaining something that we fail to stop and consider what the other person might be thinking or feeling. An empathetic person, on the other hand, listens first and only speaks after they've carefully heard. Carefully heard. That involves active listening. Most of us don't do that these days. Most of us have a phone in our hand, or are looking at our computer screen, or possibly eyeballing you and eyeballing the TV at the same time. Does that happen in your world? Right? Or you start listening to somebody and you completely zone out. You think about all the things that you still have to do on your list and you've completely forgotten what they said. Oh, and you don't want to tell them to start over. You don't want to tell them you weren't listening. So you just sort of say, okay, yep, got it. You never heard a word. Or they start talking about something, and then the minute you get the gist, you start thinking about how that relates to your life and your story. So then, in a narcissistic way, we turn it around on ourselves. Oh yeah, I remember that time that I went on vacation and I had a really good time and I went to the beach and I saw the ocean. That is not actively listening. Actively listening is almost mentally scribing the conversation while it's happening so that at any moment you could repeat it back. Staying in tune with every concept that's being delivered. Can you try that? It's a difficult one. And let me tell you, you're going to have to block out everything else. It's not for the multitasker. You must turn everything else on and really plug into that person. Number 2, express your perspective. After you've heard the other person out, you're in an excellent position to express empathy by voicing how you'd feel in the same situation. Now, this is different than turning it around to your story, okay? So for example, that must feel absolutely awful. I wouldn't know what to do. Or it's hard for me to hear what you just said because the whole situation just makes me feel so angry or so sad or so upset. These comments are all great ways to show you understand how the other person is feeling. The catch is that these statements must be genuine. It can't be while you're looking at your phone. Okay, yep, got it. Those aren't empathetic statements. So try to imagine exactly what the other person is going through. Put yourself in their shoes. Experience the moment as if it were happening to you and let your emotions guide you. Once you feel those emotions, voice them. More often than not, your emotional response will be very similar to theirs, and this will cause the other person to feel understood and heard, leading to a greater sense of connection between you both. People just want to be heard and understood. And even if you can't put yourself in their place, you can listen and let them know, I hear you. Number three, be vulnerable. We fear vulnerability because we worry that others may perceive us as foolish or weak. Brené Brown, a brilliant woman at the forefront of vulnerability research, disagrees. Brown says that vulnerability actually helps us connect with others because it communicates that we're human, complete with our own weaknesses, hurts, and fears. This creates a feeling of sameness that gives the other person something to connect to. By sharing our own insecurities and mistakes, we connect through our common humanity. And this common ground is one of the most important foundations you can lay in a relationship. Don't be afraid to share your fears, your goals, your challenges, your desires. We share all the other stuff on Facebook. Let's start really connecting with another human being. Number four, don't make assumptions. Assumptions are the enemy of empathy. To have assumptions is to harbor preconceived notions that are not based on true understanding or experience. Often we use assumptions as shortcuts to solve a problem, such as understanding a new contact. But when we take shortcuts, we don't get to see the full picture, and as a result, we don't actually solve the problem. Here's why assumptions are dangerous to empathy. When you make an assumption, the understanding you draw is rarely a good match to the problem. To the problem this person is facing. As a result, the connection you try to make feels forced and unnatural. No surprise, this often leaves the other person thinking something like, "She just doesn't understand my situation," or "He's not someone I should turn to in the future because he doesn't listen." Now, you don't want to be thought of as that person. Number five, use your imagination. Here's the problem. You're not going to be able to relate to every single experience from every single person you encounter. But to truly empathize, you still need some form of connection and understanding. The ability to imagine what someone else is feeling, even if we haven't experienced it ourselves, is critical to empathy. And one way to develop this skill is to develop your imagination. Start this new journey of being more empathetic with self-awareness. If you don't take the time to notice the world around you and your part in it, you won't be aware of the lack of empathy that you have. Look up, look out, and land on those you encounter. Start thinking of their backstory, where they might be going. Be kind. Offer a smile and a hand when you can. You know, I recently started a new support/empowerment group called Senior Connect. As you know, I'm a life coach and a recovery coach, and I actually run Women Connect, which is women helping women find direction. So we have support groups for women, but I recently started Senior Connect, which is a way for seniors to connect and share stories, share understanding, share journeys. It's just a wonderful thing to be able to connect with another person and be able to take a walk down memory lane. All of these people, anyone, and believe it or not, Senior Connect is for 50 and over. So many of the 50 to 65s and up are still working, but many are retired. And when you're retired, you know, you sort of lose that chance to tell your stories, hang out at the water cooler, you know, tell what happened the night before. You just really don't have those same sort of office type dynamics where you can share those stories. So a lot of seniors really struggle being heard, and Senior Connect is a wonderful way to do that. Since I started Senior Connect, I actually start looking at seniors in a whole different light. I really, whether I'm at the grocery store, at the bank, or taking a walk, if I see a senior, I just start immediately trying to form a story, a backstory. Wonder if they live alone. Wonder if they feel lonely. Wonder if they've talked to anyone today. Wonder where they're going. Why are they getting that sort of item at the grocery store? Wonder if they're cooking dinner. Wonder if their family is coming over this weekend. And I just start thinking about ways that we can connect. I also find it easier to go out of my way to say hi to someone and really try to make some sort of initial greeting or connection. Part of my platform is Here's Your Cue, and you might have heard that before, but Here's Your Cue stands for, the cue part stands for connect, understand, and encourage, which is exactly what we're talking about. First, reaching out to another human being, then trying to understand that person, showing empathy, right? Listening, just being there for someone, and then encouraging. And encouraging can be so simple. I understand and I have faith in you. I think you can do this. I'm excited for what you have coming next. You're going to be great. I know you're going to do it. Can you say that to someone? Are you thinking about all the times you've come into contact with somebody and you've had a chance to do that? How many times did you just, it come to your mind, but you just shoved it aside and kept walking? Or looked down at your phone? Or even worse, pretend to have a call? What are you afraid of? Are you afraid that somebody might actually open up and it might take too much of your precious time? What's your rush? Nothing is more important than the social glue we get from our human connections. This is the time in the show where I love to recap and go over everything that we've already talked about, just bringing out those nuggets, those takeaways that we can take with us. I hope you found some of those today in what we're talking about. And I hope you, like everyone I've talked to, agrees that we really need to do a much better job noticing the world around us. We are so sucked in. A lot of us believe that, you know, technology is the link to everything, and we don't necessarily have to get out to do anything. And that can be true for some things, right? We can connect with people, with lost loved ones, with people we want to mildly be connected to. We can order groceries. We can certainly find partners and date via the internet. But what we can't do is really see what's happening right in our own community. You know, what people put out is on social media is typically what they want you to know, or the rosiest side of things, as I mentioned in the show. We're not really seeing what they're struggling with. And 50% of communication is verbal, is not only verbal, but it's also visual. You need to see someone. You need to look in their eyes. You need to really be able to detect their body language to see what's going on. Simply, you know, reaching out and saying, I'm praying for you, or hang in there, it's not really the greatest show of empathy, right? We really need to be there for one another. We need people. We need this chance. And again, I can't say it enough. If we accept this watered down version or non-existent empathy that is non-existent, if we accept that as normal and just carry on, we are lowering the bar so low, we can't possibly get below it. And if we can, boy, I don't want to be here talking about that. So I am hoping that you've learned a little bit. We talked about where it comes from and how we have to nurture it and how it can get lost and how we can make silly mistakes because we get busy and we get in our own head and we get in our own problems. And, you know, those become the most important thing ever. And we've become so that we're trying to solve our own problems. We're so independent, self-motivated, self-healing, self-help, even though I do self-help. It's not, self-help is you reaching out for help. It doesn't mean that you're solving the problem yourself. When you do that and you sort of just get into your own head and doing your own thing, you're isolating yourself. You're not able to understand empathy for another person because you're so stuck in your own silo. Get out of that silo. It's not a healthy place to be. So I hope that you'll take some of those ideas and you'll make some changes even starting tomorrow. So I challenge you, connect with the power you possess to make a difference. Be willing to step outside the current and travel upstream. Be aware of the struggles around you and take a moment to understand, listen, and share of yourself. Your positive ripple will come back to you and enrich your own life. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges. I stumbled through until the path was clear.